Hello, and welcome back to the Guardian Project podcast. This is episode 83, and I'm your host, Andy. And Coyle, you can't beat me because I already saw it coming.
It's a good one. That is a very well-named spell.
Saw it coming reminds me so much of, like, Didn't Say Please. That was Throne of Eldraine. And I remember playing at that pre-release in person. You remember that, playing in person? People would say, you didn't say please when they countered someone's spell, and that was always really fun.
So I feel like someone cast delay on playing cards in person at that point in time.
They did. And we now, haven't come back from Teferi's Protection.
If only. No. One day. Zelfir, bring me back. Okay, and I'm your other host, Mike Coyle. And did you know that this next standard set is actually named after one of the Magic creators that created the set itself?
No, I did not.
He's called Haim.
Please listen carefully.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
But mostly Commander.
So this past week, I put together a new deck, Coyle.
Did you?
I did. I put together Togo and Arden. So ew. I built a new partner deck in the Boros colors. So I was, I used to have an artifact deck or an equipment deck, and it was Nazan. Mm-hmm. And then I sold all of my swords to you.
That's correct.
Traded.
That's
correct. And then I realized I could build a really kind of janky equipment deck. Mm-hmm. And I don't really need the swords for this deck. I don't think I actually want them. So Togo makes those rocks whenever a land enters, and then Arden automatically equips any equipment to a creature at the beginning of combat. And you can move any number of auras over to that creature as well. So I got to play a game with it. I don't know if I liked it or not. I played Valduk. So okay. I got Valduk with cool. four. I think I had four rocks on Valduk and a Sunforger at one point. But that was the reason I was winning, not because of anything else.
Right. I've seen a lot of lists of Arden and Rogue Rock, but and then the swords would be a lot more relevant. But you're going with the rocks and Togo.
I was going with the rocks and Togo. And the reason why is I'm playing cards like Champion of the Flame from Commander Legends, mm-hmm. which is a 1/1 with trample, but it gets +2/+2 for each aura and equipment attached to it.
Yeah.
So if you can move over 4 or 5 rocks, it's getting +10/+10 or +8/+8, making it a 9/9 or a, you know, an 11/11. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it only costs 1 and a red to do that.
That's pretty good.
Same thing with Wyleth, Soul of Steel. You draw a card for each equipment and aura attached to it when it swings. Mm-hmm. The Kemba Ka Regent, which you make 2/2 cats for each equipment on it. So I went with like the tiny equipments as opposed to, I don't want to say the word relevant. I don't think they are not relevant, but I would say that they are not the commonly seen equipments.
Right.
Because I didn't have trample.
Yeah. You went with a value based on equipment, not equipment that has built-in value, kind of style.
Yeah. 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 I think you're right. I mean, I was running Sword of the Animist. Couldn't be better with Togo. I mean, you got an equipment True. There, and you're getting landfall triggers. I have Golem Skin Gauntlets, which creature gets +1/+0 for each equipment on it. So that's cool. I had a Commander's Plate, so I wanted to throw it in. And then Black Blade Reforged is really cool because Arden makes it so that you don't have to pay that 7 to equip it to a non-legendary creature.
That's true.
Now, yeah, so...
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it played how I thought it was going to, but I realized if I had trample in some way, it would have done better. I got Colossus Hammer out, and I had like, I was swinging with, at one point it was a 13/13 on one of my creatures, but I didn't have trample. So if I had, what's the ferocious and it gains trample, Teemer Battle Rage.
Oh yeah.
No, is it Teemer Battle Rage?
Teemer Battle Rage. If it has power 4 or greater, it gets double strike and trample.
Yeah, if I had had that, I think I would have won because I had Sunforger and I could have unequipped it and done it at instant speed. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have that. And I also, just because I didn't want to play it because I feel like I see it every single time, but now I realize why is Loxodon Warhammer. Decided not to run it just because I didn't run it.
Trample and lifelink. Gosh, yeah, that's some great keywords right there.
But Shadow Spear saved me, but I still died.
Yeah. Now I do find it really interesting though that you built a Boros deck with Arden, because I built my own Arden deck as well. And I built...
Yes, but yours is not Boros, right?
It is not. It's Bant, actually. So it's Arden partnered with Kaidel with the caveat of Karuga as my companion. So it's all things 3 CMC or higher. Now, I noticed when you were talking about Arden's ability, you did neglect one word in that rules text, and that was or player. So I'm actually playing a bunch of curses in mine.
Okay.
I can actually like move all of my curses from one player to another player using Arden. And I'm using a lot of like the quote unquote creature curses, like the vows and stuff that would, you know, give things pseudo goad so that I can try to move those things around. And then Kaidel and Karuga are just there so that I could refill my hand and play more enchantments. And it should be fun. I know I was talking to you a little bit about different win conditions in this, and I actually finally found a couple of win conditions, which are going to be nice. Corrupted Conscious. So of an enchant creature, you control enchanted creature has infect. So using someone else's big creature to kill someone with infect. And actually, one thing that I discovered today was, one thing that I just thought of today was Classification. This enchantment from Ikoria, the big downside when it enters the battlefield, the enchanted creature becomes tapped. But with Arden, you can just take the aura and then just attach it to a different creature that's not tapped now and swing with it.
Oh, that's really smart. That's really smart.
You can even attach it to Arden and swing with your commander for potentially 22 commander damage. So,
yeah, that's really good. That's really good. So I'm going to change it up. I feel like... You know, I'm not sure if I want to play Arden Togo or if I want to play Wylith, but I feel like the way that it's built, I should definitely be bringing this to a more casual table.
Sure.
I got run over by dinosaurs in the end. There was a Dipala deck, Gishath, and a... Oh my gosh, I have to remember these partner names. Brynlin, the Moon...
Oh, the Moon Snake? Kraken?
Moon Kraken?
I don't know. It's a big snake kraken. Thing.
Yep, it was Brynlin and Gilrana, Piranha. No, it's the 6 CMC Matters green partner from. So it was that with Brynlin the Moon Kraken. I think it's Moon Kraken. We're going to call it Moon Kraken.
It's the Moon Kraken.
The Moon Kraken. So I played against those. I took out the Brynlin deck when they were out of commission and they didn't have anything going on with a bunch of Valduk tokens. But then, I got smacked in the face. I also got my secret lair extra life this week.
Oh, nice.
So it actually arrived today. So that was really exciting. So now I have a new consecrated Sphinx to put into a deck. My first foil, and then another version of Teferi's Protection. So... Someone on Twitter said that this consecrated Sphinx makes it more difficult for people to remove because it's smiling at a bunch of children. And it's not a creepy Phyrexian Sphinx.
Yeah, I think it's still going to be just as easy to remove for everyone. Just an inkling.
But you can't remove a smiling Sphinx. I mean, it's smiling. It's so happy.
I mean, if there's one thing I learned from reading Jace's lore, it's don't trust any Sphinxes ever. And I mean Jace's lore throughout his entire life, because then he went to Ixalan and had to deal with another one. And he had to deal with one on Ravnica. Holy crap.
He's had a rough time with Sphinxes. Yeah. Sphinges. I think it's called Sphinges.
Sphinges. That's right.
Yep.
Oh, and
Sphinges and Sphinx.
And if you're on our Discord, you might have noticed that there have been some changes made to our Discord. We have a bunch of new channels and emojis, all thanks to Chris Wolf. So a special shout out to Chris Wolf. Thank you for helping us with the arrangement, because Andy and I are pretty not great at the things with the Discords.
We're still learning how to Discord. Can you teach us how to Discord? No, we've got... Guild emojis, So all 10 guilds, there's a Fibblethip, totally lost emoji. There's a Commander Legends emoji. And my favorite, there's a Noyandar emoji now.
And a Shirei emoji.
Which Shirei's head alone is so creepy. And if that's what you're reacting with, I am scared.
It just means that something's going to die and come back. That's all it means.
That is what that means. So I have been very much looking forward to reacting to people's rules questions with the Azorius emoji. Law and Order.
Bum, doesn't bum, work that bum. Way. Azorius emoji.
It doesn't. That's not how the rule works. Azorius emoji. And then they're like, well, I'm going to try it anyway. Is an emoji. So if you want to jump into our Discord, let us know. If you're a patron, you're probably already in our Discord, and we do have a new patron this week. Thank you so much, Alex Marcy, for joining our Patreon. We really appreciate your support. So if you have any questions on that, please feel free to reach out to us. We have a new Looking for Games channel. So and you can like opt in, like really fancy reacting to things. And I just, all this stuff is mind blowing. So if you want to support our show, you can head to patreon.com/guardianprojectpod and donate for any dollar amount.
Yeah. And if you're looking for a different way to support the podcast, whatever you're listening to the podcast on now, if you're watching on YouTube, if you could hit the bell icon, subscribe, follow, comment. We're always looking for feedback on the podcast so that we can better tune the podcast for you, our viewers. You're the reason we do this. We don't do this just to hear our own voices.
Although I listened to our show last week again, because I really wanted to hear about the 366. It was really fun, and I am getting more and more used to hearing my own voice, and I would say I don't dislike my voice anymore.
Ooh, it's not even I don't hate, it's just I don't dislike even.
I don't dislike it. You know, my voice is much deeper in my own head. Mm-hmm. And when I hear myself, I was like, oh, is that what I really sound like? But it was pretty good, not gonna lie. I think the first time ever I said, oh, okay, interesting. That's what I sound like.
Yeah, the narcissist in me has always loved my own voice. I don't know.
classic Coil.
Yeah.
So Coil, what are we talking about this week?
So big thing this week, call time. You know, call time. We're getting all the spoilers and everything, but we're also getting a bunch of story. And for people like Andy and myself who have next to no knowledge on Nordic mythology, this is all brand new to us. Oh, except for like Thor, Loki. So that's what we're going to talk about this.
I know there's a Bifrost because I watched one of the Thor movies.
What about the Trifrost, though?
Did I call it one of the Thor movies? the Trifrost?
Yeah, it is from a Thor movie.
Yeah, that's when it is. That is the Trifrost when it's -3 degrees out.
Ugh, don't remind me. It's not, you know what? The weather's okay right now.
There's a new card called Frostbite, and I was going to use that as one of my intros, and then I couldn't workshop it enough, and I said, well, I'm not going to use this. All right, well, let's head into our Kaldheim stories. So we had... our first article was released, The Planeswalker's Guide to Kaldheim, and it tells us all about where we're heading. So we are learning about, first, the Viking world that consists of 10 realms and the World Tree. So from what I've been seeing on Twitter, everybody's like, oh, they made the... And then they say some character's name from Norse mythology. And I was like, I don't know who that is. And they're like, oh, they actually did it. They gave us this. And I was like, well, I still don't know who that is. I mean, I know who Loki and Thor are. Yeah. So those ones were giveaways. But apparently, Kaldheim is 10 realms and the World Tree. And the World Tree, I guess, is what was first. The world was born from a seed, and that seed grew into the World Tree, and then everything else came after that. So they're calling that the first saga. And so the realms of Kaldheim are all mini planes connected to a cosmic structure, And the people of the realms can, I guess, see, like they can see the world tree. They can see things on like their horizon, and they know that other planes exist. And some people can even travel in between those planes.
And it's and specifically some people who aren't necessarily planeswalkers, even though there are planeswalkers in this plane.
Yeah, and we'll get into that. They specifically list out like the type of like wizards or sorcerers that can traverse that. I mean, it's kind of like the Blind Eternities, right? That's what's between planes, and it's kind of like that, but not.
I think it's honestly, Andy, I think it's exactly that. And I think we'll talk about it more at the end of the article, but I think they are using all of these concepts in Kaldheim to set us up for something later on in like the main storyline for Magic the Gathering. Yeah. I think it's going to be cool.
Yeah. Well, I know there were some folks in our Discord that had some of their own theories. So I am curious to see as we get some more artwork and cards for this set to see what comes out. So obviously previews are going through the 19th. We're excited to chat about those as well after. But focusing more on the story, they told us that there is all throughout the realms, they said there's a hall of Valkyries that can be seen in the sky. And they said it's as a sundog effect. So there was quotes around sundog, like I was supposed to know what that meant. And had you heard of that word before?
No. Just figured it was a dog's son, like a puppy.
Yeah, no, and it's not a puppy. No, so a sundog is a mock sun, formerly called a parhelion in meteorology, and is an atmospheric optical phenomenon that consists of a bright spot to one or both sides of the sun at with a 22-degree halo. Like, this is a real thing. So this is always happening on Kaldheim, though.
And this is supposed to be Valhalla, I think, which is like the heaven or whatever that you would go to if you die in battle as a warrior.
Okay. So you get to see that from all the realms. Everybody always sees that.
Right. So now the thing connecting all these realms, you know, we said the world tree, but really it's... The world tree is, I guess the realms are like leaves on the world tree or branches on the world tree. So the thing that is in between all of these realms, they're calling it the cosmos. So it's the space between realms, a nebulous space filled with shifting lights like an aurora. It's known as the cosmos. It's challenging but not impossible for denizens of one realm to cross the cosmos and enter another realm. So they're specifically talking about even just like a normal kind of person, not a planeswalker, not a superhero or anything that can actually travel between these realms.
But correct. And you might want to, but you might not want to because there's lots of monsters out there.
Yeah. Cosmos.
We've got to see a couple of them so far that were previewed, like the Koma, the serpent that lives in the cosmos. So it is Koma, cosmos serpent. But also, you got your cute little squirrel, Toski.
I love when they were talking about Toski, how it was, you know, even creatures like Toski who could fit in your hand, but it's just resilient and just comes through the plains like it was nothing.
Yeah. So apparently there's a lot of monsters that live there. The serpent, the true size is unknown because apparently it can divide itself into smaller segments and move independently around the world tree, and was able to freely enter and exit those realms whenever it wanted. But it can't anymore because apparently the new gods, or the Skodi, basically said no and banished it from being able to enter the realms, which is causing problems on Kaldheim.
Right. So there are a bunch of... So it's when the realms start to, I guess, like fuse together or interact with each other, I think that's what's causing the problems. It's pretty unclear as to why not letting... these cosmos creatures or cosmos monsters cross is causing these problems, but we know the problems that it's causing. So they're called doom scars, So it says, Doomscars, although each realm is distinct, they are all in constant motion around the world tree, and sometimes they overlap. Such an overlap is called a Doomscar, and it's a violent, explosive event marked by world-altering earthquakes and geological destabilization. Inevitably, the inhabitants of the overlapping realms come into conflict. So this is kind of what I was alluding to a few minutes ago when we were talking about mechanic that Magic was trying to introduce. And I think Doomscars is going to be a thing when planes start interacting with each other. And I think there might be a legendary creature that they announced in this set that might be, you know, hinting at something like that. If you catch my drift, Andy.
I am. So I am feeling like Doomscars is a real life thing, but only partially, because I feel like me stuck in traffic, there's a violent explosive event, but it does not bring upon us earthquakes and geological destabilization. However, that is in fact what happens to my mood and attitude when I am in traffic. So I think Doomscars, I mean, they're taking this right from real world.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I've seen from your road rage, Andy, you tell me that what I see is actually a very calm version of it, that you hold that you hold back when I'm in the car. So you've also seen me when we drove to Chicago. You see how I handle the stress.
You do.
Don't
you
drive do. 40 miles an hour, even if it's snowing. Get out of my way.
Get out of my way. So Doomscars, it's a real world thing, folks. Aside from that, there's also some shapeshifters and omen seekers who can cross the cosmos. So shapeshifters have the ability to change form, and then omen seekers are, they use what they refer to as rune enchanted longboats. I don't know what happened to the short boats. They only have longboats.
That's right.
That enable passage between the realms. So I'm expecting that we will see, I mean, we know vehicles are coming back. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting to see maybe a legendary vehicle. Maybe like, I mean, maybe there's going to be one. I don't know. Maybe not, actually, because they seem like these aren't legendary characters.
Wasn't the chariot that's being pulled by cats, isn't that a legendary one or no?
I guess there is that one. I assumed that vehicle was mostly just and if I fits, I sits with really cute cats and wasn't transporting those cats between the realms. But I could be completely wrong.
I think so. This is, again, we don't have Norse mythology knowledge. I think there is a Norse god or goddess that is pulled by a chariot that's pulled by two cats. So that could be getting with that god to go between. Well, I guess it's Asika. Whoever Asika is representing from North mythology. If you know who Asika is representing from North mythology, leave it in a comment below.
Right. So the gods of Kaldheim are all there. There's a bunch. I think there's 12 here, at least, that are listed. So Alrund is the god of wisdom, and Redan is the god of justice. Helvar, god of battle. Egon, god of death. Torolf, god of thunder. Bergi, the god of boasting.
Bergalicious stuff. Fun-loving it.
Huh?
Bergalicious stuff.
Bergalicious stuff. Fun-loving and charismatic. I think they got this from me. I mean, I am Bergi. Cosima, god of the sea. Turgrid, god of fear. Velki, the god of lies. Is it Essica?
I don't know.
Essica, the god of the world tree. Kolvori, god of kinship. And Jorn, the god of weather.
That's right. That's
I assume we're going to see all of these.
Yeah. It seems like a lot to put all in one set, but they are printing a lot of these cards at like uncommon, and they're not underpowered at uncommon either, from what we've seen so far. So it's kind of cool that the way that they're doing it. We know that in Magic's past, they've done our first time that we went to Theros. It was three standard booster boxes on Theros. So, Born from the Gods, Journey to Nyx, and Theros.
But those were all at Mythic. So I actually don't see any gods at Uncommon. I do see some gods at Rare.
Okay.
But I don't see any at Uncommon. So I assume we're going to have some at Mythic and then some, I don't know if they're lesser gods or if they're just, the card itself is not, not going to be problematic for a draft environment. So it made it to just Rare instead of Mythic. But I do think that we're probably going to see all 12 of these.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would make sense. It would make sense. And I like gods, playing with them. And these gods, when we get into some of what they do, they are functionally different than the ones from Theros, the ones from Amonkhet, the ones from Ravnica that we got to see when we were in War of the Spark there. Mm-hmm. I personally am looking forward to seeing what the god of boasting does, and the god of fear does strike fear in me. We have that card. Turgrid has been previewed, so we'll get into that. But I like the idea of these, and I feel like the way that these sets are being built also makes it so that I can also transfer into like a D&D book later.
Yes.
And have like the Theros book that they had created for the D&D crossover has like really, really fleshed out stories and back, you know, information that you can use in a D&D campaign. So I feel like we also are probably going to see multiple sets on Coldheim, maybe not in a row, but if there's 10 realms and we're only visiting some of them now, we'll probably be back to see some more of them.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, I had the exact same thought when the fact that you brought up Dungeons and Dragons. This article took me probably, and I was a little distracted, but probably like 20 to 30 minutes to read.
Yeah, and there's a lot.
The remainder of this article, we're talking about Bredegarde, which is the human realm of Coldheim. One realm for the rest of this article. There's 9 more realms to talk about after this. And there's so much detail that they added in this. So Bredegarde, the human realm, has 5 human clans. They're all in perpetual conflict with each other. And
classic.
Yeah, humans. What are you going to do? Each clan has its own approach to both martial combat and magic. It consists of one large continent surrounded by a giant sea. You can imagine it's like how a magic plane would be set up in any part of the universe. The land is dominated by a sprawling plain called Feltmark. So Feltmark is the next section that we go into. There is an Alderguard forest. There's tons of plant life, animal life. It's diverse. It's like, obviously, every plane is like its own planet. It seems like every realm is going to be like its own planet as well. But the amount of detail that they go into with each of these 5 clans and how much travel there could be between all of these different areas. I mean, you could do a giant campaign just in this one realm, and now you're talking about transporting between 9 or 10 different realms, 9 different realms past Bredegarde. I mean, it's so much. All right,
so if we start our D&D campaign now, and then we work through each realm, and each realm is 1 year of a D&D. We can do Coldheim for 10 years. What level would my character be at the end?
6.
Six.
Nah, when I'm DMing, I actually do have a rule where we're not going past like level 11, because you pretty much become a demigod at level 11. And it's so difficult to balance a campaign, in my opinion.
Well, I'm just going to take over for one of the gods. But you know what? Hold up. I can do this better now.
I mean, honestly, if we start looking at the cards that these gods are printed on, these are the most killable gods that they've ever made in Magic the Gathering history. So
they have.
Let's kill some gods.
Let's kill some gods. So these clans, though, it says they represent, or there is a representations from all 5 clans signed a blood pact to abide by a common code of law governing the relationships among the clans. This really sounds a little reminiscent of like Ravnica and the Guild Pact. And so anyway, if you don't follow the law, like let's say, for example, a murderer owes a debt to the victim's family. And the severity of that debt depends on the family member's relationship to the victim. So, you might have to, pay that back in gold or through livestock or property or a period of servitude or in blood. So I feel like it's very much an eye for an eye here.
Yeah. Depending on which clan you're talking about. Yeah, that's absolutely for sure.
I mean, if you take my eye, I'm gonna take your eye.
An eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind.
No, you have one eye left.
Well, there's that.
There is that. And so it sounds like on Bredegarde, the land is surrounded by the Curtis Sea, which most humans, they they avoid this. But apparently there are sagas, which we get to see again, that speak of monsters that lure boats and to watery graves and assume human form and murder villagers in their sleep. It sounds like this is a really scary ocean, worse than like the regular ocean, which is already scary to me.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's
I don't go in the ocean. No, thank you.
And maybe this also has to deal with Norse mythology, but even in other mythologies, we see the sirens that are trying to lure people in, and sea serpents and blah, blah, blah. Mermaids that actually just kill you. You know, they're not fun. Mermaids aren't fun. IRL.
They're not like the Little Mermaid. They don't want like forks and stuff.
They don't even know what a fork is.
Murder you.
It's a thingamajig or something, right? Isn't that what Ariel calls it?
She's got plenty.
Yeah. Look at this thing. Isn't it great? It's me opening a pack of cards.
So anyway, it says once a season, all the clan's navigators return to the network of docks at the heart of the pillars where at the edge of the sea. And apparently these pillars are inscribed with sky charts and maps and secrets across the realms. But the omen seekers guard their knowledge, obscuring their records with runic magic. Only a member of the clan can decipher. So we actually here move into the Omen Seekers.
Yeah, so the Omen Seekers are these powerful, well, quote-unquote powerful sorcerers, magicians, magic users, whatever you want to call them, that actually have the abilities to go between realms and that kind of stuff, using their longboats, their rune encrusted longboats and all that kind of stuff. So I guess they use runic magic. So that's really, I guess, where we're going to see the source of magic on Kaldheim is from runes. So their whole thing is about being careful, charting bold exploration, hope to predict doom scars before they occur so that they can help out or hurt in case they're evil omen seekers. I mean, we don't really know how omen seekers align right now. They just want to collect knowledge. And it says the omen seekers are led by someone named Inga Rune Eyes, who's a blind seer who possesses all the knowledge gleaned by the clan on their voyages. And I think if I take a quick look, we have not seen an Inga Rune Eyes card printed yet. I would
no,
like.
No, we have not. So the article continues. It starts to talk about the clans. We don't have to get into each and every single one of them. It sounds like that the clans are aligned with specific like colors likely, and that they have specific ways that they do things and the type of creatures or the way that they fight. So we will see a lot of that in the cards that are that have been previewed. But we want to talk about a couple of the cards that came out and have been previewed. Coil, would you like to start us off with some cards that you are looking forward to evaluating and testing, or just adding because you know it definitely want, you know, you definitely want it in a deck?
So far, for all the people that follow at home in my deck building opportunities, I have not found any creatures that easily slot into She-Ray, Shizo's Caretaker, yet from this set. However, Pyre of Heroes, I think it was a card that was revealed almost first with all the new, or the finishing of the cycle of the double-faced modal lands.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just been overlooked just because the hype's gone. I mean, it was released back in the middle of December. So Pyre of Heroes is a 2-mana artifact that you could pay 2 and tap it to sacrifice a creature to search your library for a creature card that shares a creature type with that sacrificed creature and has converted mana cost equal to 1 plus that creature's converted mana cost. Put that card on the battlefield and shuffle your library, and you can only activate this ability at any time you could cast a sorcery. So I like this card a lot. I think people are only seeing it as like a tribal card. But even as a sacrifice outlet, I know you do have to tap it, but it's instant value. In tribal decks, this is, I think, going to be an auto-include. You can kill your Llanowar elves and go grab a 2-mana elf lord or something like that. It's going to have huge implications in straight-up tribal decks, but even in a deck like She-Ray, being able to remove like a perilous mirror to go grab my mirror retriever or something like that, or vice versa. I think I have the converted mana cost backwards. It is going to be really useful. So it's there might be some combo implications to it too. Like maybe you can go grab a corridor monitor or something and untap an artifact or something like that. But I think this card definitely is already overlooked because it was released back in the middle of December.
Yeah. The first card that I saw that I am very interested in was actually previewed today is Tybalt's Trickery. So It is an instant for one and a red. And it says it starts out with the sentence, counter target spell.
Beautiful. So red?
Red, counter target spell. That's pretty great. But then it says, which this is interesting, says choose 1, 2, or 3 at random. Its controller mills that many cards, then exiles cards from the top of their library until they exile a non-land card with a different name than that spell. So in Commander, this kind of that the different name than that spell, I guess, probably never going to come up. Mm-hmm. But in Standard, I understand. It says they may cast that card without paying its mana cost. Then they put the exiled cards on the bottom of their library in a random order. So you could get rid of something really awful and then have something less painful come out, or you could get rid of something that's awful and still see something awful. But
that's true.
This is pretty fun, especially when you just need to take out something that is going to either win the game or something that you know is going to cause you problems, and you're giving red another counterspell.
Yeah, it's a counterspell chaos warp instead of a remove a permanent. You're countering basically a spell. I think this has huge implications for mono red CEDH for sure, giving them a straight up counterspell, not even against blue spells now. And the free spells in CEDH that you get might be harmful to another player if they are casting, you know, their demonic consultation or something when they don't want to be casting it, or they'll hit something unconsequential, maybe a mana rock or something like that. So I think this is actually a really huge, huge card. But there's actually another card that was printed today. It was released today.
It was actually printed on January 11th. It
probably was. I mean, they're probably still printing it. I mean, I hope so. But there was a common that was actually released that technically also has a little bit of a Tybalt tie-in. And that is Open the Omen Paths. It's for 2 and a red. It's an instant. It says choose one. Add 2 mana of any one color and 2 mana of any other color. Spend this mana only to cast creature or enchantment spells. Or creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn. The creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn. That's the garbage side of this card. I mean, there's probably going to be some really good limited implications to that side of the card. But if we're talking Commander, using the 3 mana to filter into 4 mana of 2 different kinds of colors as well, I think is going to be pretty big. Even in formats like Modern, it might be really big. You do see some desperate rituals and stuff being used in Modern. But this one is actually going to be able to produce 2 different colors and not just red.
Right. You know what's funny is these are the 2 cards that I had put into our Discord, and I was like, look at me, enjoying all the red cards again.
You're going to have to build another mono red deck, Andy.
I can't have all the mono reds, but I'm going to talk about a card here. Let's get off a red. Let's get off a red, and let's go over to blue, the best color. Okay, we have another extra turn spell, and I'm here for it. All Runs Epiphany. 5 blue, create 2/1/1 blue bird creature tokens with flying, and then take an extra turn, exile this, and you can foretell it for cheaper, so you can pay 2 and exile it face down, and then cast it for 6 instead of for 7. All day.
Yeah.
Please.
I mean, it's
you have no idea what I'm going to exile. I feel like foretell, just thinking about it now, reminds me so much of Morph, but for non, just like for other things than just like a face down creature.
Yeah. Totally agree. I think it's definitely a Morph thing. I don't love the ability as of right now, except for on cards that are instants. I love Foretell on instants. I don't love Foretell on sorcery-based cards. And this is with absolutely no play experience with Foretell cards as of right now. So
I like this because, I mean, at this point, if you're doing it at sorcery speed, it's a sort. I mean, I think you just don't like sorceries compared to instants, but it's just cheaper. So you're just reducing the cost by one.
Well, it's like, yeah, that's true. So it's helping you out on the next turn. You can consider it, you know, a replacement for.
Well, you can do this on turn two and then let that card sit in exile for 5 or 6 turns.
Right. If you don't want it in your hand for some reason. And maybe it's because you're going to be over 7 and you don't want to discard down to hand size. But I almost think that like bluffing a counterspell on your hand or something might be better than foretelling. Although they do have a foretell counterspell as well, as we know. Saw it coming.
Foretell that counterspell.
That is right. So there's actually a card that was revealed a few days ago. At Uncommon, it's a legendary creature bird. It's actually an owl that I already built a deck for.
Coyle's been in here calling dibs in our Discord, and I was like, what the heck? Coyle's like, here's this card that was previewed today, dibs. I was like, oh, okay.
I did, and that was actually a mono black card. But this one is actually an Azorius card, Andy. You should be happy. I built an Azorius deck in Architect.
I am proud of you. Oh, it's legit already built.
Yes, yes.
Is it on private or can I go look at it?
It's on private. Come on.
Oh, dang it.
Yeah, I gotta play test it. I gotta
go see how to beat it
first. So this is Vega the Watcher. So it's for 1 white and a blue. You get a 2/2 flying bird spirit. This says whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, draw a card. All it does is draw cards, Andy.
It's the best thing you can do. I'm all about it. I'm here for it, and I'm proud of you.
And I think this card is really, really, really strong.
I mean, what cards are you casting not from your hand in blue and white? I mean, you got Foretell.
You have Foretell.
You can have Suspend.
You can have Suspend. You can have Flashback. Mm-hmm. You can have Adventure. You can have like cards like Isochron Scepter that you create a copy and then you cast it.
Yeah.
There's a lot. There was a list actually that I saw on Reddit that talked about you know that place that we don't talk about. The place we don't go to.
The Reddit. Website we don't travel. I don't traverse the Reddits.
Right.
It's usually more upsetting than it is not upsetting.
But it went over the list of all the different ways you can cast cards not from your hand. And I think there's like 9 different ways you can do it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's really huge, the amount of cards you can play, which makes it so that you can be really low to the ground and you can play just the most efficient spells that you want. Oh, Cascade is another one.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So there's a bunch of... Oh, and Escape. There's so many different keywords you can use. And even cards like Torrential Gearhulk are helping you cast cards out of your graveyard without the use of Flashback or anything. But I got it so that the converted mana cost of the average converted mana cost of the deck is 2.6. This is a casual version of this deck. You can make this deck really, really nuts. I think it might even be... using the combo piece of Isochron Scepter with Dramatic Reversal under it, you can draw your whole deck as long as you have 2 mana. You don't need infinite mana because you're constantly casting Dramatic Reversal from exile, not from your hand. I think Vega is going to have some implications in CEDH because of it, and it's just blue-white control.
Interesting. I see that all of your notes are based on CEDH here.
On Vega, yeah, but you can build it casually. You can build it just fun draw cards, but you have to have a win condition. You got to win somehow. Maybe Laboratory Maniac.
I want to talk about the call Behold the Multiverse. It's another blue card. It's scry 2, draw 2 with Foretell for 2, but can we just talk about this artwork?
Which?
It's so good. It's Behold the Multiverse. So it has... our new planeswalker here, our new planeswalker, Nico Eris. But so the card itself has a bunch of like mirrors, like shards of mirrors, looking at what appears to be potentially other planes.
Or
looks
realms.
Looks like we're looking at something. Or realms. It does say multiverse, not Behold the Realms. So it looks like we're looking at Theros. It looks like in one of them, I'm not sure. I haven't seen a high resolution, but it 100% at the bottom on the right side, I guess, or the left side of the actual card, it totally looks like there could totally be an Emrakul right there.
Ooh.
You know, I'm wondering, you know, I don't know. I would like to know. It says countless worlds unfolded before Nico, everyone in need of heroes. That's why I'm assuming it's not just Kaldheim and that they're looking at other worlds and he's going to go save them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he is a planeswalker. Obviously, his spark ignited at some point during this story and he planeswalked to another plane. Hopefully that's true and not just to another realm. Because that would be fun. Got to have more planeswalkers. And this is that particular planeswalker is the first non-binary planeswalker, isn't it?
This is true. So Nico, you are correct. So they would be traveling. And they're a blue-aligned human planeswalker, though, and they're specifically from Theros. So that's why I'm assuming we're seeing some of that Theros up there on the right side. It looks like there's definitely a pantheon of some sort that you're looking at there on like the cliffs. Maybe it's that pantheon that there's the original artwork, the Elspeth Sun's Champion, where like it's the background of the artwork from that, I think is the pantheon, or at least one of the promotional shots for the original Theros set. Yeah. So I'm here for this card specifically for the artwork. I'm not usually one who specifically looks at the artwork, but I feel like that one, if this card is printed in foil, I really hope that all of those mirrors get like the special foily stuff.
You know, that's true.
I think that would look really cool if this card, when you shine, it's really shiny on those mirrors.
Shines bright like a diamond.
Shine bright like a diamond.
Yes. All right. So I gotta talk about this artifact, Andy.
Yes.
Maskwood Nexus is going to be a game changer for me specifically. So this is a 4-mana artifact, so 4 generic mana for an artifact that says creatures you control are every creature type. The same is true for creature spells you control and creature cards you own that aren't on the battlefield. And you can pay 3 and tap it to create a 2/2 blue shapeshifter creature token with Changeling. Now, I have this deck called Morophon Everything Tribal, where I just play Morophon and then value creatures that have 4 or 5 pips of different colors so that I can cast them for free with Morophon. And you get a huge advantage when you play cards like Arcane Adaptation or Conspiracy. Name slivers. All your cards are slivers. I cast the first sliver, and now I cast, you know, I cast Sissei, but Sissei now counts as a sliver, and I get to Cascade. Maskwood Nexus makes it so that I don't have to name any creature type. All my cards are all creatures. The only thing bad about Maskwood Nexus is that I actually do play some of the Ikoria monsters with Mutate, and so I wouldn't be able to mutate onto anything because it would make all my creatures humans. But you could donate this to someone playing a Mutate deck, and then they would never be able to mutate onto their creatures ever again. That's the real play. That's the big play with Maskwood Nexus.
So you're going to play the you're going to play the donate cards, and you're going to give this to Leslie from Tap That MTG, who plays Otrimi. Wow.
Yeah, that's,
I'm going to call her. I'm going to tell her you said that.
Yeah, you should. Now, the bottom part of this card doesn't seem very threatening, to pay 3, tap it to create a 2/2 blue shapeshifter creature token with Changeling. But Andy, do you remember Birthing Boughs?
I do. And I ran it in my Wolves deck.
It's a great card, and this is 1 mana less than that, plus you get a bunch of extra abilities there, which, by the way, I had to go read Coat of Arms rules again after this card got released, because I needed to know how Changelings worked with Coat of Arms, and you get +1/+1 for each creature that shares a creature type with it, and if it's a Changeling, basically you just get +1/+1 for every other creature that's in play.
Yes.
So with Maskwood Nexus, then all your creatures get all the +1/+1s from all the creatures that are in play.
Right.
You have a good time.
That's pretty good. And we're seeing a significant snow theme. Obviously, we thought that was happening. So the last card I'm going to mention, it's one of our rare gods, and it was previewed today, Jorn, God of Winter. It's in the Sultai variety, though. So the front side is 2 and a green. When Jorn attacks, untap each snow permanent you control. So if you're playing snow lands, which we know we're getting, you get to untap your lands. Feels like a wilderness reclamation on Swing. Obviously, there is it Bear Umbra does something. Is it Bear Umbra? I think is the one that says when you attack. So you do that. And then the other side, people on Twitter are dubbing this Snowdrotha or Molsnotha. Because this one says, tap, you may play target snow permanent from your graveyard this turn. If you do, it enters the battlefield tapped. So you can play the artifact side if you want and play cards from your graveyard. I have not built a Sultai deck before because it wasn't speaking to me. But this one seems really fun, being able to, you know, do I want to go for the mana? I'm going to play Jorn. Is it late game and I need to get some stuff back now? I guess I'm going to play the Cauldring, the Rhyme Staff. I'm going to play the staff. I'm going to get some stuff back.
I'm interested to see if there's going to be a way to turn your normal permanence into snow permanence, where, because I'm thinking, you know, the fact that everything comes in tapped and they just released this guy in Commander Legends at Sultai, his name is Arkelios, and he would make your tap stuff come in untapped. I'm curious to see if you could fit it in an Arkelios deck or if an Arkelios goes in this deck. And I think it makes more sense where Arkelios goes in this deck. But again, interested to see if there's some sort of enchantment that says all cards that you own are snow permanents now or something. But it costs a lot.
There's Arkham's Weather Vane, which is target snow-covered land becomes a non-snow-covered land, or target non-snow-covered basic becomes a snow-covered. And then there's Thermal Flux, which says target non-snow permanent becomes snow until end of turn. I mean, so we already had some of this. One of them was Cold Snap. One of them was Ice Age. So there's definitely some, at least they were thinking about this. So and one's colorless and one's in blue, so you've got something there. So I'm curious to see how many snow decks we're gonna get and if there's any other legendaries that are going to care as much about snow. But I know people have wanted it, and I think that Wizards has learned that, you know, if it's going to be a thing, like, I think people are still disappointed they don't have an energy commander. I mean, you can do it, but it's not like the card itself doesn't say energy do something.
Yeah, there's not a legendary creature that exists that says energy do something.
And I think that people are, obviously energy is considered a parasitic mechanic, meaning that it kind of just works with itself. It doesn't necessarily need anything else. And that's something that even Magic and Articles Wizards has said, we struggle with this because, you know, the answers to energy is in usually a different set, and everything that you want for that comes from that one set. So I wonder if snow is going to be the same way, if they have cracked the code. And I wonder how many of these Jorn God of Winter decks we're going to see. I also saw on Twitter the jokes calling him Jorn Snow.
Yes.
You know nothing, Jorn Snow. So that's pretty funny.
That's really good.
I cannot take credit. I do not know the originator of said joke. I just saw it on Twitter at some point in like a retweet. So Jorn Snow is a really good name for that. But in that artwork, do you see that little like snow? Like there's like a little wolf in the back. It's so cute. But then there's like a ferret up front, and I don't understand that. But I guess snow ferrets and wolves, it's things now.
Yeah, it's all things, all snow things.
All snow. He snows things. Snow nothing. Jon Snow.
You snow nothing. Snon snow.
Snon snow. So we have seen some of the previews. Obviously, not all of these are out yet, but we're certainly looking forward to looking at more previews over the next week and a half. I am still looking for more cards to add to Noi. I know, Coil, you always look for cards that go into Shirei. I always look for cards that are going to care about Noyandar, or Noyandar would care for. I haven't seen any in a little bit that I want to add to my specific build of Noyandar, but I also look at like rogues for my Edrix by Master of Trest deck. So, you know, looking for those weird creature types, or the, oh, we just decided to tack on this creature type to this this creature is always really interesting, because I play quite a few tribal. I mean, I've got tribal humans, I have tribal minotaurs, and sometimes they throw in like one minotaur. And I wouldn't be surprised if we, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know Norse mythology, Greek mythology. I know more, so I don't know if there's a minotaur in Norse mythology. But if there is, maybe it'll be in the Rakdos variety, you know? Yeah. So looking for things like that. But all things are looking good. I'm excited.
Yeah.
To see more.
Yeah. Me too. It's going to be really, really fun.
Yeah. So I think that's the end of our show this week though. And we want to thank you all for listening. If you want to contact us, you can find our podcast online at theguardianprojectpodcast.com. You can find our social media on Twitter at Guardian Pod and our gameplay videos on YouTube at youtube.com/theguardianproject. And you can email us at guardianprojectpod@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at atflory.
And you can find me on Twitter at wormcoilengine. And we want to give a special thanks again, Chris Wolf. We mentioned you earlier in the show. We're going to mention you again here, handling all of our graphic design. Now one of our moderators on our Discord, one of our patrons, one of our friends. Thank you. Thank you so much, Chris. And of course, Ryan Nichols, our producer and editor. Always, always thank you. Thank you to you.
We will be back next week with some more call time previews. One day we'll have our own preview card. We should probably reach out and see if we can get a wouldn't that be exciting to have a preview card?
That would be really exciting to have a preview card, especially if it's like, I don't know, I'm just going to throw it out there. Definitely, it's never going to have Jingataxius. Just give me Jingataxius.
Why do you want that as your preview?
Shieldred? Elish Norn.
You want one that's coming out for another set with them, or are you hoping for this?
No comment.
All right, we will see you all next week. It'll still be cold. So
cold.
It's cold out here. Coldheim. It's cold outside. It's cold on Coldheim.
It's cold. In
I assume. It's cold everywhere.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah. All right. See you guys next week.
Bye.